it's time for Rain and Shine, your weekly regional science update, where we explore how the planet works and how we work with the planet. Here in Western Colorado, we have some pretty famous microclimates. For those of you who know, there's that snow belt in the hills just outside of Montrose. And then, as everybody knows, we've got Grand Junction's National Monument. And for those of us fortunate enough to live here, we have the fruit baskets of Palisade and Peonia. In fact, Western Colorado is a bit of a showcase for microclimates. But what are they? And how do they fit into this whole global climate change deal? Let's start with understanding a little bit more about their characteristics. And then, over the next few episodes, we will dive into how microclimates fit into and interact with the global climate change picture, and how, unlike that monstrously large challenge, easy it is for us humans to make and change them right where we live. According to Encyclopedia Britannica, a microclimate is a climatic condition unique to a relatively small area, within a few meters, yes, they are British, or less, above and below Earth's surface and within canopies of vegetation. That's kind of vague, so let's dive in here. Microclimatic conditions depend on such factors as temperature, humidity, wind, dew, frost, heat balance, evaporation, and evapotranspiration. Keep in mind that humidity, dew, frost, evaporation, and transpiration are all part of small water cycles. In particular, the effect of soils on microclimates is considerable. First of all, sandy soils or other coarse, loose, or dry soils are subject to high maximum and low minimum surface temperatures. Think of the sand dunes in the San Luis Valley. They'll burn your feet in the day and then freeze them off on all but the warmest nights. How reflective the surface of the soil or other surfaces such as snow, forest, and grasslands are, is also important. Surfaces of a lighter color reflect more of the sun's energy and respond less to daily heating. Scientists call this albedo. If you have lived in or from a large city, you may remember that thing called the White Roofs Initiative. Same thing. Another very important feature of the microclimate, which I want to emphasize for us who live here on the cusp between the desert and the mountains, is the ability of the soil to absorb and retain moisture. This largely depends upon the organic matter content of the soil and how covered by vegetation or how exposed it is. Vegetation, in turn, is integral to the formation of a microclimate because it controls the flux of water from the landscape into the air through transpiration, or, if it's not there, through direct evaporation. A good example of this transpiration and vegetation piece that you may remember is that a big mature tree can lower the surrounding temperatures 2 to 5 degrees, while a mature forest or urban forest can lower them as much as 9. In addition, vegetation also insulates the soil below it and reduces temperature variability in surrounding regions. Wetlands do the same thing at an even greater degree, stabilizing temperature extremes and reducing high heat compared to surrounding regions by as much as 14 degrees. All this means that areas where there is no vegetation, no wetlands, and where the bare soil is exposed exhibit the greatest temperature variability. Very high heat, very cold nights. So the keys to the making of a microclimate are the vegetation, soil, surface water, and for those of you who live in deep canyons, shade. How they all play together influences temperature and moisture. More on that very important moisture piece next week. In the meantime, enjoy all of this wonderful, moisture-rich snow. You've been listening to Rain and Shine, a production of the Learning Council, produced by Corey Stanton and written and narrated by me, Calla Rose Ostrander. To submit your nature and science questions, email us at rainshineweekly@gmail.com or visit our Facebook page. And thanks for listening.